Have you ever had someone get your gender wrong? I was mistaken for a man for the first time a couple of months ago, which had never happened to me before. And it was actually in a picture. It is this picture. I'm gonna turn the lights down a little bit. We're reacting to something hilarious. And this was on Facebook, and somebody who didn't know me commented, "Man, the guy on the right there in the tie just cannot believe what just happened." And that's me, guy in the tie. Apparently, if you don't know me, you know that longer piece of hair I used to have there looks kind of like a sideburn. And then you add that to with the short hair and the tie, and being the only one in the tie, it looks very masculine, apparently. Even though the picture is described as of the San Diego Women's Chorus. So this is not something that ever happens to me. Despite my short hair, my gender presentation is generally pretty feminine, pretty well in line with expectations of what it means to be a woman. My body and my features conform to those expectations. I have a tendency to wear fairly feminine clothes. I really like ballet flats and earrings. And while it's fun for me to wear a tie sometimes, unless I go out of my way to change other things about my appearance and to wear very baggy clothes, I'd end up in a tie. I just look like a woman in a tie. And I share this story with you not to invite along commentary about my appearance or reassurances about that picture, but I wanted to use my experience as an example of how our perceptions of gender can just turn on a dime and cued into some very specific and small things like the angle of a picture, whether or not someone is wearing earrings, whether or not someone is wearing a tie. We can go to a blank slide for a bit here. So I grew up with the idea that gender is a very fixed thing, a fundamental category for understanding humanity, that's objective and separates people into two groups, two separate boxes. And as an adult, I've been learning that it is more complicated than that. Gender is certainly very real in that it shapes our experience of the world, and it's one of the first things that people look for when they're interacting with a new person. But it's a product also of culture, of societal expectations. It's a performance, as Judith Butler famously called it. I've also realizing that gender is a good example of breaking out of either-or thinking and the ways in which there is beauty and power and wisdom that comes from doing that. For many of us, breaking out of those boxes, breaking out of boxes is hard, and gender is certainly no different, and maybe very much harder. It's fundamental to the way that we interact with people. It's what we look for. It's what we understand. I am of the age and the demographic in which everyone I know is birthing babies. And what is one of the first things that you ask a pregnant person? Is it a boy or a girl? And people will get my friends who have recently had children will say, people will get very angry with you if you won't tell them. Like it's the right of strangers in the grocery store to know the sex and the gender of your fetus. There are now, it's a big thing, there are now gender reveal parties where you tell friends the gender of your baby by having some surprise. There's a slide. You get a cake, and it's white on the outside, and then when you cut into the cake, it's either pink or blue. And that tells everyone whether or not they need to buy you onesies with ties and trucks and blue and hammers, or whether they need to buy you onesies with ruffles and pink and ballet slippers. So the whole thing starts with the assumption that if on a sonogram, the person looking at the sonogram sees what looks like a penis, then that person, the fetus, will grow up into a person who is a man with unambiguously male chromosomes and body parts, who will dress and act in masculine ways, love sports, not express his feelings very strongly, not want to wear dresses or pink, primarily be friends with men and be attracted to women. And that is a lot riding on a body part in a sonogram. And gender isn't really as simple as all of that, is it? Never mind, by the way, that pink was actually, some of you know this, pink was a masculine color for many years in the Western world. And wearing skirts was actually considered very manly by the Romans. So we begin to learn the things that are societally shaped about that. All of those things don't always line up all together. I have a fun little explainer on gender for you. This is the gender unicorn. Can you see if I stand here? Okay. So this is at least where we are today in the sort of gender studies circles, understandings of gender in this country at this moment. On the top, you have your gender identity, which is what gender you are, the gender you understand yourself to be. I am a woman. Gender identity. Next, we've got gender expression. So that's those sort of how I present myself to the world. My gender expression is generally pretty feminine. That's the earrings, the ballet flats, the makeup, moving in a certain way. If you pay attention, you'll notice, you know, that men take up more space and are societally allowed to sit in certain different ways than women are allowed to sit. So that's so much for gender expression. Sex assigned at birth, when the doctor looks at your baby and says it's a boy, it's a girl. And it's worth noting that it is possible and not entirely uncommon for that to not be entirely clear. There are people who are babies who are born with body parts or chromosomes that don't fit into those expectations. Certain body parts are bigger or smaller than they're supposed to be. And then there are people with chromosome differences that that interact with that and make people's physiology different. We don't know exactly how many births there are with this group of things, which is called intersex conditions. It tells you a lot about gender that there's no definition of like what an intersex condition is. And it can come down to some very arbitrary things about measuring. If your body part is this long, then we're going to call you a boy. And I think the other reason we don't have a lot of data on that is the shame and stigma associated with being outside our conceptions of sex and gender, and then just having to do with bodies in general. Then at the bottom, we have the two parts of sort of sexual and romantic orientation. So who are you physically and emotionally attracted to? This is where you have lesbian, bisexual, gay. I identify as a lesbian. So that is my, fill out my gender unicorn as a female, feminine, female, lesbian. So much for that. Notice that sexual orientation and gender identity are pulled apart and separated. There was a time, not so long ago, and still continues a little bit, when those things were thought of as very much together. Lesbians were considered sexual inverts who were attracted to women because they were masculine in their physical appearance or behavior. And this is often the case in the popular imagination. Lesbians are stereotypically masculine. Gay men are stereotypically feminine. And I have to say, this is not always the case. I know you know this. Probably like me, you know many lesbians and bisexual women who are very feminine, who are very femme. You would never be able to guess. I also know plenty of straight women with short hair and sensible shoes and power tools. I actually know one such woman whose friends recently bought her a shirt that says, "Did I break your gaydar?" Because she did. She broke everyone's gaydar. So I tend to enjoy flirting with the boundaries around gender, like I said. I think it's fun to wear a tie. See if I can tie a tie for you. While also wearing a microphone. It's gonna be really challenging. There we go. Particularly, it's complicated though, right? The ideas about the lines between sexual orientation and gender identity. There's ways in which it is useful for me, fun for me, as someone who identifies with the LGBT community, to make myself a little bit more visible in certain ways that usually involve gender. So much for my tie there. Oh, thank you. And so, it turns out it's actually pretty safe for me to play with gender in this way. I'm actually pretty comfortable generally with the superficial expressions of gender, and so even doing this really doesn't challenge things all that much. Being asked to wear a dress and makeup doesn't really bother me like it does other people. Playing with gender is safe for me because it is very easy for me to retreat into passing as a straight white woman. And that's not the case for everyone. And when it isn't, playing with gender expression and blurring those boundaries isn't so much a game as much as your life. And it becomes dangerous. Any challenge to gender norms feels like a real challenge can be deemed very threatening. And the people who do so end up in danger. We saw this in our story, right? Pinky is put in physical and social and emotional danger by his liking of the color pink and by liking to play with girls. How is he insulted? You are a girl. He's physically pushed off his bike. He's socially in danger. He's made to understand that he does not belong. He's put in social and emotional pain. He's made to feel like the things he likes are bad and that he is bad for liking them. And he is put under great pressure to conform. He considers giving up the things he likes, and the kind of friends he likes, his best friend. And he even changes his name. And this is not, of course, just about children's books. You can see these same patterns in the lives of real people. And I bet you have been in some version of this story. Maybe you were bullied yourself. Maybe you've seen it. Maybe you were slowly shamed into giving up something you liked because it was either too girly or not ladylike enough. Or you found yourself slowly changing the way you dressed or something about your appearance because you didn't want to be mocked the way you saw your peers mock someone else. I preach about gender today, not just because it's fun and it's Pride weekend, but because I think it's the responsibility of religion and people who pay attention to morality to address human flourishing and human thriving and human suffering and human pain. And the rigid gender binary is something that causes suffering and pain. I talked, preparing for this sermon, to a friend and colleague of mine, another minister, who is transgender and genderqueer. They are a person who does not use any gender pronouns. They use they and them to refer to themselves. And they said that being as someone who walks around in the world very sort of visibly not gendered, being misgendered is somehow both this expected fact of life and kind of a repeated punch to the gut. And they talked about getting stares from children. They talked about the disgust of people in airport bathrooms. They talked about the very complicated system that they use when they're on a long drive to determine to keep themselves safe by trying not to stop, only stopping at restaurants in off-peak hours when it's not going to be busy so that people won't be paying attention. They can maybe sneak into the restroom without anyone noticing. They know which national chains have single-stall restrooms and which do not. It's something they think about all the time. When they asked recently, they asked their spouse, what's it like to be out in the world with a gender non-conforming person? I know I'm the first person like this that you've ever dated. The spouse said, it's like watching you die from 1,000 cuts every day. Breaking out of the gender binary is very scary for a lot of people. When something upends the way that we are used to seeing the world, for a lot of people that can be incredibly threatening. It's also part of this, I think maybe a big part of it, is that gender is not neutral. Despite all of the work that has been done by feminists and people who are fighting for gender equality, it is still something fundamental about our gender system that divides us into the powerful and the less powerful. Sexism is still very real. Things that are masculine are thought of as better and stronger and more important. In my experience, it's much more acceptable for a girl to be a bit of a tomboy than it is for a boy to wear a skirt or like pink. It is safer for a woman to wear a tie than it is for a man to come to work in lipstick. Someone said, well, of course it would make sense that women would want to act a little bit masculine. That's like a promotion. But any break, any embrace of something that is not masculine elicits deep anxiety and often violence. And there's deep policing around masculinity. Our story today, I thought, was such a textbook example of all of that. Pinky's gender expression is policed by other men. There's a particular scene in which the other two boys come over and they're not sure whether they should laugh or act tough. There's the, he's excluded because he doesn't want to participate in, because he won't fight back. And there's the idea that associating with women is shameful and insult, and it's an insult to be called a woman. And that's real, not just on the playground. And it's the reality of sexism that I think is one of the things that makes questioning gender incredibly powerful. It means questioning the basic assumptions that we have about sexism, about equality. It calls into question the idea that some people deserve more power than other people. If there is no longer a male and female rigid categories, then we can't make that hierarchy. And there is great creative power in doing that. Religion has long found the holy in the places that are in the cracks, the places that are between the binaries. The Zen Buddhist koans, I think you've heard of, they use paradoxical statements to unlock deeper insight. Mystics of all stripes have told us that the holy is something that can't quite be grasped with categories, with words, with the way that we usually understand the world. The reading today comes from an early Christian text that I love. It was lost for many years, recently rediscovered, and in it, you have this semi-divine voice that speaks in this series of revealing I am statements. And in the Judeo-Christian tradition, those are the kind of statements that are usually used to refer to God, that are made by God, I am. The voice here in the reading speaks as a primarily as a divine feminine figure, which is powerful enough in a tradition that has been dominated by male language. But the voice also sometimes speaks as a divine masculine figure. And it's a voice that speaks in contradictions and blurs between gender roles and expectations and pronouns in the Coptic. I am the bride and the bridegroom, the voice says. The God that is revealed and described in this text is a God in the cracks, in the places that are shunned by society. The voice says, do not stare at me in the shit pile, leaving me discarded. This is a voice that demands we pay attention to me. When there are two choices, pay attention to the hidden third option. Pay attention to that which is oppressed, which is marginalized, which is made invisible, because that, the text is suggesting, that is where God is. Put another way, that which frees us from either-or thinking is beautiful and holy and life-giving and powerful. There's a funny thing about pronouns that I noticed when I was in seminary. It was the policy of our seminary to only use gender-balanced or gender-neutral language when we talked about God. I went to a Christian seminary. And so if there was a Bible reading that said something like, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his steadfast love endures forever, we would change it to say, oh, give thanks to God, for God is good, for God's steadfast love endures forever. We just overuse the word God and not use pronouns. And what's interesting is that I also know some people who identify as outside the gender binary, who identify as genderqueer, and don't use pronouns, and just use their name. So if it were me, it would be, I talked to Elizabeth, and Elizabeth was planning the worship service, and it was great to see Elizabeth. And I noticed that that's surprisingly similar to how we were treating God in the chapel. Maybe we have gotten God's gender wrong this whole time. Maybe God isn't male or female. God is genderqueer. So this Pride weekend, go out knowing that those places where you don't quite fit into all of the boxes are places of holiness and beauty and glitter and God. And pay attention to them when you see them in other people. And do not be afraid of their power.